Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. If we have no expectations and feel like we don't deserve anything, how can we live a happy and healthy life? If we live in fear that our house could burn down and we wake up every morning grateful that it hasn't, or if we cross the road in fear that we could be run over, and we are grateful that we survive, wouldn't that restrict our development and creativity? I was speaking about gratitude, and I was saying how sometimes looking for something to be grateful for is difficult. There are times in our life when we feel so depressed, so down, that it's difficult to find anything to be grateful for. And I was suggesting that even the stuff we take for granted, that we wake up in the morning, that our heart is still beating, that our eyes can still see, that our house is still standing, these are things to be grateful for, because there could have been an earthquake in the night or a fire and our house could have collapsed. You cross the road grateful that you've made it to the other side. But that doesn't mean there's a big difference between living in fear of something and living with an awareness that it's possible. Living in fear is what restricts us. If we're afraid that my house is going to burn down every night, if we're afraid that there's going to be an earthquake every night, well, absolutely, we can't fall asleep. The gratitude in the morning when you wake up that my house hasn't burned down is contingent upon the fact that I was able to fall asleep in the night. If I was afraid that my house was going to burn down in the night, such that I couldn't even fall asleep, although I haven't even been able to arrive at the beautiful morning. So fear is actually what constricts us. And having gratitude for an act of grace does not mean that we live in fear of the absence of that grace. So gratitude that nobody hit me while I was crossing the road, gratitude for my health, gratitude that my loved ones are healthy, gratitude that my house is standing. These are wonderful, positive things that we can all find in our life. You don't have to dig very deep to find something to be grateful for. But that doesn't mean that we should live in fear that it will happen, or that the fear is somehow an inherent part of the gratitude, that I have to first worry about something and then be grateful that it didn't happen. No. We simply live in awareness. Yeah, my house could burn down. Yeah, there could be an earthquake. Yes, I could be walking down the street in the crosswalk with the green light, and some crazy drunk person could come out of nowhere and mow me down. The road could open up. There could be a sinkhole right under the road, and it could literally open up and swallow me in. It's all possible. Or I could make it safely across the road and open the door to my house to find that my loved ones have passed away while I was out. It's all possible. But that awareness of possibility should lead to two things. An awareness of our lack of control and gratitude for grace. It should not lead to fear. Fear does not give us any more control. The illusion, the myth, the game that fear plays is somehow if I can get scared enough, if I can get stressed enough, I'm going to somehow be able to impact the outcome. Oh my God, I'm so stressed about this exam I have tomorrow. I'm so stressed, I'm so stressed, I'm so stressed, I'm so stressed. Well, there's an underlying unconscious aspect that somehow if I can generate enough stress, maybe God will, you know, take mercy on me and give me an A even though I didn't study. If I'm really, really worried about something, maybe that worry can somehow keep it at bay. But that's not how the universe works. All the fear does is ruin what I have in that moment. Ruin the peace of that moment, ruin the joy of that moment, ruin the health of that moment. Because the fear, of course, is making my pulse rate rise, my blood pressure rise, it's ruining my health. And it has no impact on the outcome. So that awareness of these things leads to number one, the knowledge that I have no control. And this is a really important and powerful piece of knowledge that seems really obvious, but none of us lives according to it. We think that we can control the world. We think that we can control people around us. If I just look at them in this way, if I get angry at that, if I reward them like this or punish them like that, if I sulk, if I mope, if I slam the door to my room, if I go to bed without eating dinner, well then he'll be nicer to me, then she'll be nicer to me, then he'll do what I want, she'll do what I want. We think that we can control people. That we can control the universe, but we can't. So an awareness that my house could burn down, an awareness that I could get hit by a car, that awareness is not meant to lead to fear. It's meant to remind me over and over again, really, there but by the grace of God go I. Pooja Swamiji always says, you know, one of the trillions of cells in the brain, one of them, could stop firing or fire incorrectly. And it's over. And there's nothing you can do to prevent that in terms of control. We couldn't even properly digest our food. I mean, if you swallowed your meal and an hour later you discovered it hadn't digested, there's no circuitry in our conscious mind that we could activate to convince that stomach to digest our meal if it hadn't. It's just grace of the being, grace of this creation, that our food digests, that our blood circulates, that we inhale and exhale, sit down for meditation and be aware of the breath. And what you'll find is, within a few minutes, your awareness has drifted. And then you bring it back. And a few minutes later, it's drifted again and you bring it back. And as far as meditation goes, that's fine. But thank God that we do not have to consciously breathe. Because if every 3 minutes, when our awareness left, our breath stopped, none of us would be sitting here. So it's an awareness, really, that just there by thy grace go I. There by thy grace my food is digested. By thy grace I wake up in the morning. By thy grace I'm breathing. By thy grace, my house is still standing. I didn't get hit this time when I crossed the road. But it's not meant to lead to fear. It's meant to just give us that awareness. And the reason that that awareness is so important is, number one, of course, because it's the truth. And the truth in and of itself is powerful. But also because it keeps us out of the little stupid things in life. If I am living in this illusion that everything's in my control, yeah, my house will keep standing. Yeah, everything's going to be fine with my loved ones. Yeah, everything's fine with my health. No, I'm not going to get run over by a car. We lose sight of the fragility of life. We lose sight of the fragility of those around us. We take it all for granted. And then what we find is that our minds end up getting stuck in stupid little things that take all of our time and attention away from gratitude to the divine, away from connection. So living with that awareness keeps us also grounded in what's important. If I take you for granted and forget that I could lose you at any moment, I might yell at you because dinner didn't have enough salt in it, or I might, you know, yell at you about this or be angry at you about that, or try to convince you to do this, but little. But if I'm constantly aware of the fragility, whether it's a cell in your brain, whether it's a cell in my brain, whether it's the fault line between the plates of the earth that runs right beneath us, that at any moment could give way, whether it's the volcano on the mountain above our heads that at any moment, whatever it may be, it brings a freshness, a truth to life. This is why so many people who have gone through either horrible accidents or near-death experiences and terminal illnesses are deeply grateful for them. What all of them say is not, oh my God, I wish I had never had to deal with cancer. I wish I had never had that accident. But what you hear is, I'm so grateful that it happened because, yeah, it was hell. But it was a hell that has given me a filter forever of actually what's important and actually what to focus on in my life internally. Yeah, I still go about doing my work, but my mind is so different. My mind is no longer wrapped up and bothered by these little things because I've been this close to death. And when you're this close to death, none of the little things matter. The other aspect, of course, that it's meant to bring in is just gratitude. But it's not meant to bring fear. And that's really important to the person who asked this question. That awareness is not to generate fear. It's to generate gratitude and to generate an awareness of the truth of the fragility of our life.
You're listening to OTRFM. Part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Aliyah, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. How do we deal with irrational fear? Well, first of all, we realize it's irrational. If I really, really deeply in the cells of my being know that something is irrational, I'm not going to be afraid of it. So you cannot, there's actually a whole study in psychology about phobia, and you cannot give people phobias of a lot of things. It's not that you can develop a phobia of just about anything. If I really know that something is irrational, I will not be afraid of it. So for example, if I am afraid of getting malaria, let's just come up with something. If I'm afraid of getting malaria, and I hire the most toxic, horrible, deadly companies to come and spray, or companies to come and spray horrible, toxic, deadly, you know, DDT and chemicals in my house so that there's no mosquitoes at all. And I know that there's no mosquitoes because my dog died, my cat died. I mean, everything that was alive in that house died because the chemicals are so deadly, nothing is still alive in my house. Well, I'm no longer going to be afraid of getting malaria because I know I have just killed not only the mosquitoes that could have given it to me, but I've killed everything. So my fear would be gone. The place that fear exists is when on some level I actually think something's going to happen. Or could happen. If something is impossible to happen. I mean, if I'm lying on the ground, let's take a better example than my malaria example. If I'm lying on the ground, you cannot generate a fear of falling in me. Right? I'm already lying on the ground. Where am I going to go? Or if I'm sitting here on the couch, a foot above the ground, you could not generate in me a fear of falling, because even if I did fall, what I would know is I would land on my bum, nothing's going to happen, I'm a foot above the ground. But take me to the top of the Empire State Building, and you could absolutely generate a fear of falling in me. Put me on a rooftop, you could generate a fear of falling in me, because it's possible. So, in order for there to be fear, there has to be some part of me that believes that it is possible. So when we say an irrational fear, the first part is, well, how can I take that awareness of the fact that it's irrational and get it from just the outermost layer of my brain deep into my being? Because the minute it gets deep in my being, my fear will dissipate. That's part one. But part two is faith. Really faith. There's a beautiful, beautiful story of Swami Vivekananda that I love, where he was always emphasizing to his disciples, be fearless, be fearless, be fearless. And one day his disciples decided to test him. And he was giving a lecture, and they stormed the lecture hall, dressed up in masks and, you know, outfits of bandits, and they've got guns that look real, but of course they're fake, and they start firing these fake guns. Everybody in the audience has no idea it's a joke. So they start to scream and run and do whatever people do when they're afraid. They run out the door, they get under chairs, they fall on the ground. But Swamiji keeps giving his lecture. And at the end of it, finally, they come up and they fall at his feet and they bow down and they say, Swamiji, how could you do it? How is it possible? Here there were guns. We were shooting. How could you keep giving a lecture? And he said, because... They said, did you know that the guns were fake? He said, no, but that's not the point. He said, the bullet that is meant to take my life will take it even if I'm surrounded by 100 guards. And the bullet which is not meant to take my life will not take it even if fired at point blank range. And so that faith, that awareness that I'm being taken care of, that doesn't mean bad things aren't going to happen. Doesn't mean I'm going to get every job that I wanted. It doesn't mean I'm always going to be healthy. It doesn't mean that people I love aren't going to die or leave me. But it means that on the core foundational level, I'm being taken care of. And there is nothing to fear. When I was very, very young, maybe a year, year and a half, two, we were at a gas station in LA getting gas, and I don't remember it vividly. I was very, very young. But what I remember was my mom was out of the car getting gas, and suddenly you heard shots fired. And I heard lots and lots of people screaming. And my mom came and scooped me up and held me in her arms, and we ran like around the side of the, you know, gas station building. And then it was over. And that's all I remember about the event, because clearly nobody, you know, gave me the news and the details later on. But the distinct experience of hearing people scream, of knowing that there was some problem going on, that anxiety, and then being in the mother's arms, even though shots were still firing, even though people were still screaming, the fear's gone. And this is true for all children. We see it all the time. The minute they're in the mother's arms, they may fall, they're scared, they're hurt, they cry, mom picks them up. They may still be bloody, they may still need a bandage, but that fear is gone. And when we can live with the real awareness that we're in the mother's arms, in the divine's arms, then fear dissipates. Like a child's fear dissipates in his mother's arms, so our fear about life should dissipate when we realize that we're in the divine's arms. And again, that doesn't mean everything's going to be perfect, but it means that we're being carried. We're being carried by the divine, and things are going to be as they should be. I'll end by sharing a very quick story about Pooja Swamiji, which is one of my favorite stories about fear. He was on an airplane, true story, he was on an airplane and in the United States, and they were flying over Chicago, or into Chicago, or out of Chicago, but the Chicago area inevitably is always full of storms, and this particular day, there were very, very, very heavy storms. And the plane was literally rocking. And at one point, the plane plummeted about 1,000 feet. And the pilot came on and actually told everybody to take crash positions, that it was very possible he was going to have to make a crash landing. People are screaming. The overhead bins are open, you know, bags are falling out, people are holding their loved ones. And Pooja Swamiji is writing. He's writing on a pad on his, you know, table. Now, the story was told to me by the man who was traveling with him, who was the chief editor of our Encyclopedia of Hinduism project. And so Swamiji is writing. And Dr. Rao says to him, "What are you writing, Swamiji?" And at that moment, then the plane plummeted another 1,000 feet. More stuff came out of the overhead bins. Again, people were screaming and screaming and crying, and the pilot again is saying, "Please stay in crash positions. You know, we're very likely going to have to make a crash landing." And again, Swamiji's still writing. And this chief editor says to him, "Swamiji, for God's sakes, get into crash position. What are you writing?" And Swamiji says, "I'm writing my speech." And Dr. Rao says, "Swamiji, speech? What speech? There's not going to be any speech. We're all going to die." And Swamiji says, "Well, see, I know that I'm not going to die. And since everybody else is convinced they're going to die, it means I'm going to be the only survivor of this plane wreck. And if I'm the only survivor of this plane wreck, naturally they're going to want to take my interview." And he said, "My English isn't so good. And so I thought that as long as I still had you alive sitting next to me, I should figure out my speech so that I could ask you any questions that I might have of how to say something in English." So I love that story, because it's such an incredible example of what's possible. Not necessarily something that all of us can think about striving for or attaining. I mean, when the pilot says, "Take crash positions, we're going to crash," most of us. But to show what's possible, when you're that connected, A, to what's about to happen, so that's another point, but of being in the arms of the mother, that there's no fear. So whether she's bouncing you like this, or she's bouncing you like this, or she's, you know, bouncing you like this, in the mother's arms, it doesn't matter. Because you're being cradled and taken care of either way. And so the irrational fear gets treated by the rational mind really, really showing it how irrational that is, which is able to then seep into the truth of our being when we really believe it, and by the devoted heart and the devoted spirit of knowing that we're in the hands of the divine.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. That which you experience here when you say a practice of devotion. Well, devotion to what? To God, I presume. Doesn't matter what name or form, but a devotion to God, a devotion to the divine. Well, obviously your concept of the divine is one that is infinite enough that God exists not just here on the banks of Ganga, but that God exists just as much in the same infinite way in New York, in Los Angeles, in Miami, in London, in Sydney, and wherever we go. Because otherwise it wouldn't be God. I mean, if God only lived in one place, would lose the whole concept of being infinite. So we know that. So if what I'm talking about is being devoted, and I know God exists, well, then the question becomes, well, why is it so hard for me to see God, to connect to God? And a lot of that has to do with the environment that we're in. This is an environment that is buzzing with spirituality. You say to people on the street, how are you? And they say, oh, Ganga ki kripa. Just grace of Ganga. Or you say, how are you? And they say, bas Bhagwan ki kripa. It's just God's grace. So even in everyday conversation, what are you planning to do tomorrow? Oh, Thakur ji ki icha. Whatever is God's plan. So our even non-religious colloquial conversation is invoking God every third word. But it's also a very devotional world. We gather together on the banks of Ganga to worship, to sing, to pray. Everybody who's here is here for some spiritual practice, whether it's deep meditation, whether it's yoga, whether it's satsang, whether it's philosophy. But Rishikesh may be many things. It's not the shopping capital of the world. It's not the diamond capital of the world or the gold capital of the world. So nobody's coming here with just the aim of I'm going to shop or I'm going to find gold or I'm going to find diamonds. So you've got people who have come here looking for the same thing. And that helps. And don't underestimate that. Because this is the same reason why in college it's so much easier to study in libraries than to study in your dorm room. Right? I mean, the book is the same. Your brain is the same. Theoretically, you should be able to learn that material wherever you are. But anybody who's ever tried to study in a dorm room with music blasting, people running up and down the hallways, people drunk, you find yourself reading the same paragraph over and over and over again. And yeah, there's a vague recollection that I may have read this somewhere before, but it's not sticking. You take the same book, the same brain, you go sit in the library, and it's not just quiet or noisy. It's a whole atmosphere. And so that's what you've got here. So first of all, don't underestimate the power of a place, the power of satsang, the power of association, or your sangha, the group. These things are very important. This is why in the Indian spiritual tradition, we emphasize satsang so much, is being together, being in the association. It's very, very powerful. And it changes us. We're energetic beings. We're picking up on each other's energy. And if the energy around us, even if it's quiet, but the energy around us is frenetic, moving in and out, drinking, reading comic books, being stupid, well, it's going to be hard for me then to really channel my energy of study and focus. But if I'm in a place where everybody's energy is study and focus, that becomes very, very conducive to me. So the first part is try to find a sangha, find a group. And it doesn't, you know, you don't have to click 100%. When you go back, there is a level of acceptance of something as enough, even if it's not perfect. And so, for example, I remember when I was back in California for a few months when Pooja Swamiji sent me back, there were local organizations, you know, there was a Yogananda organization and there were a couple other organizations that weren't 100% exactly what my devotional practice was, but they were close enough. They were much closer to my heart than the student union was, or the coffee shop was, or the cafeteria, or my dorm room. And so you may not find a place that feels exactly right. I'm not saying it's going to feel like being here. But at least a group that's committed to the same practice. That's very powerful. And remember, of course, as I was saying in the beginning, that this divine, to whom you are devoted, lives in everyone. And literally, as you walk down the street, start a practice. Can you see God in everyone? And I don't mean theoretically. I don't mean walk down the street with the, oh yes, you are all divine feeling. But literally, can you look in people's eyes and find it? And it's hard. It's hard in big cities. I mean, it's hard anywhere, but it's especially hard in big cities. People are stressed. They're not open to you seeing the divine in them. But can you see it? Make it a challenge for yourself. See how many people each day you can see the divine in. And then it makes your spiritual practice a little bit more broad, and B, it also brings just a sort of an element almost of fun into it. The spiritual practice, instead of being, you know, drudgery, becomes fun of, okay, how many can I get today? I got 5 yesterday. How many today? Oh, the subway is going to be interesting. Who can I see on the subway? Who can I look at and really get, yeah. You can go another level. When we're aware of the fact that we're all one, which of course our spirituality tells us, if we're all one with God, then it means we're one with each other, right? If A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. Okay, that's exactly what I'm saying, just in a spiritual way. So if I'm one with God, and everyone else is one with God because God is one with everyone, then it means I'm one with everyone. It's the A equals C part. So if I can't see God in you, can I see me in you? Can I have a connection with you of, oh yeah, that's me in there. Not this small me. Not the me who's on the way to meet a friend for lunch or on the way to my job. But the whole me. Yeah. Look at that. Okay, so you got one body there, one body here, but yeah. That's me in there. And so that ends up giving a deeper and fuller and richer just experience of being there. The last part I want to share about this, though, is a true story of when I was back in Los Angeles with Pooja Swamiji, actually, having been here for about a year. And I said to him, and LA is where I'm from, and I said to him, I said, Swamiji, I know you say God lives everywhere. Why is it that I feel God so much more in Rishikesh than in Los Angeles? I mean, I understand intellectually you say God is everywhere. Why don't I feel God here in Los Angeles the way I feel God in Rishikesh? And Swamiji said, yes, God is everywhere. And God isn't more in Rishikesh than in LA. He said, but Ganga is Ganga. And that answer has stayed with me 20 years. Because it really is the epitome of the yes and yes answer. Yes, God is everywhere. Yes, you can connect with God everywhere. And yes, there is something very special and different here. And neither undermines the other. They coexist. It's the yes and yes. So you do that there, and you come back here.
This is OTR-FM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. How can we be a witness to our feelings and analyze our thoughts and emotions and at the same time be in the moment? I find myself sometimes observing my thoughts, my words, and my instincts, which leads me to understand myself better, but it removes me from being in the present. So there's two aspects. We speak sometimes about observing, understanding, contemplating, and we speak also about witnessing. And the question is really, how do we balance those? If I'm trying to see and analyze and understand, it takes me out of the present. So how do I balance that? We balance it by doing both of them at different times. It's like saying, you know, when I take a shower, it pulls me out of my sleep. How can I stay asleep and bathe at the same time? Well, you can't. Obviously, the shower is going to pull you out of sleep. It's very important to sleep. It's also very important to bathe. But you can't do them at the same time. In the same way, both of these aspects are very important to our spiritual practice, but they don't go together. So aspect one is the witnessing. And when I say aspect one, it could have also been two. It's not because it's more important or should come first or anything like that. Just aspect one is the witnessing. That's the non-judgmental, non-analytical, simply witness. That's I'm meditating. I'm watching my breath. Thoughts come, but I don't go with them. I also don't analyze them. I don't judge them. So a thought may come. Maybe my stomach growls even. Maybe it's not even a thought. Maybe it first begins as just a physical sensation. So the witnessing mind just notices and brings the awareness back to the breath. But the thinking mind says, oh my God, I'm so hungry. Haven't eaten anything in such a long, you know, since last night. I ate dinner way too early last night. I really shouldn't have eaten such an early dinner. Wonder what's for breakfast. The thinking mind starts doing that. The analytical mind comes in and says, God, you know, even I read that article that says it's not good for your adrenal gland to go hungry for so long. Maybe I should change my meditation time. Or the even deeper analytic mind says, why am I thinking about food? Each of those is a very valid thing to think about. We have a body. If something in our schedule is not working with the physical health and stability of our body, well, that's an important thing to pay attention to. It's also important if the same thoughts keep coming back in our meditation to investigate, why is it? That's of course important to analyze, but not while we're witnessing. And here's why this is so important. Human beings are the only species that have the ability, or that we know of, that have the ability to be aware of their own consciousness. It's the only beings that actually have the ability to watch. So I can start to get angry, and the witness is watching the anger come. Now, if I don't have that ability, if I haven't cultivated the ability, if I haven't cultivated the ability to witness, then what happens is anger comes and I find myself screaming and shouting or hitting things or drinking or using drugs or repressing it, developing ulcers. Whatever my reaction to that anger is, I have become the anger. And this is why we say things like, I am angry. Well, we've just given it an identity. I am angry. I am depressed. What the witness gives us the habit of doing, first in our meditation and then in our life, is having a different place to sit. Most of us sit in the drama of this life. I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm hungry, I'm sleepy, I'm excited, I'm nervous. That's where our consciousness sits. If I say to you, how are you right now? Where are you right now? Close your eyes and see what's it like in you right now. Most of us are going to give an answer that's smack in the middle of this drama. I'm excited. I'm ecstatic. Aarti was enthralling. I'm nervous. I'm worried about something. Whatever it may be, but it's right in the middle of the drama. If we're able to sit instead of in smack in the middle of the drama, in the one who's simply witnessing. If you imagine an ocean, and you're sitting on the cliffs above the ocean. So the ocean's going on, but there's two places you can be. You can either be in the ocean, being thrown around by the waves. Nothing wrong in that. It's not, again, that one is better or worse. But it's very important that we cultivate both abilities. So you can be in the ocean, or you can be sitting on the clifftop watching the ocean. And then slowly there's even another layer of witnessing, which is the one watching also, the one sit on the cliff, watch the ocean. But that comes later. So we need to be able to witness. And while we're witnessing, we cannot analyze. Because absolutely, as the question asked, it takes us right out of witnessing. In that moment, we are just there. We're not judging, we're not analyzing, we're not naming, we're not following our thoughts. We're just aware of them. Like watching the waves go up and down. But, as I began with, analysis and understanding is also very important. It just has a different time and place. And so if you notice in your meditation that the same thoughts keep coming up all the time. I'm always hungry in my meditation. Well, there's two reasons. One might be because I'm going for too long without food and I'm sitting down and my stomach is growling and it's an awareness. Another may be a much deeper issue. If I find myself always hungry in my meditation when actually it's my evening meditation, only a couple of hours after dinner, rather than a late morning meditation 15 hours after I've eaten something, well, then that becomes something worth thinking about. What's that inner emptiness? What is that hunger that arises when I close my eyes? What am I hungry for? What am I longing for? Or why am I looking to run into food instead of sit in my meditation? What is it that's coming up for me that I would much rather numb with a bunch of bagels or cake or, you know, whatever it is I'm interested in going to eat? Or if certain fears or desires or whatever it is that keeps coming up, this is worth analyzing, because that's the stuff then that's keeping us from fully connecting with the divine within ourselves. But the time for analysis is not meditation. So this is where we need, like, we have a time to sleep and a time to bathe, recognizing that both are crucial, but not simultaneous. In the same way, we have a time in which we cultivate the ability to just be present. Here's the last piece of that. The analysis and the understanding takes place by the mind. And the being present takes place in the heart, in the spirit, soul, in the consciousness. And what the mind does is separate. The mind thinks about things. So I'm thinking about my fear that keeps coming up in meditation. But if I'm thinking about that, I've become separate from the one who's meditating. In meditation, the goal ultimately is union. Union with the divine, union with the universe, union with both the creator and the creation. And so if I relegate my meditation to my thinking mind, then I've lost the opportunity to connect with my heart. I've lost the opportunity to sit in consciousness, in awareness. So we have separate time for both. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.
Mm-hmm.